Welcome to the
Idiot
Explaining
Entertainment
Extravaganza, only on GamingUncensored.com. D4.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to episode 3 of E4 2026. I'm Tommy. Jamie sitting over there. How you doing, man?
I think at the beginning of this show, you're better than me because I've been watching all this stuff trying to keep up. And I noticed why you're so far behind. You kept saying, I'm so far behind. And the reason why is because you're playing video games. You got video games and I'm so jealous. I'm sitting here watching crap online and you're playing Onimusha, man. I'm freaking out. This is not cool.
That is fair, but it's technically work for this show.
Yeah, technically, you know, like,
I'm show prepping, playing some Onimusha. So we will talk about that momentarily. The Onimusha demo is out there if you want to try it out. It's pretty cool. And in Bond as well, we'll talk about a little bit of that before we get into Microsoft, which is what we're going to cover on this episode of E4, the Xbox showcase, the news that came out of it, and the news that came around it, which is also maybe as notable. And so we will get into all of that momentarily. First, we're going to thank the Patreon guys, Cabbage Jose, Narc Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavosh, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, Luik, Logan, Liz, Jordan, Gio, and Derek. Sorry for going too fast through your names. Thank you all for your support, truly. Yes. We are getting to play video games. Bond is amazing, and thank you guys for helping us buy a video game and pay for server costs and all the other stuff your money goes towards. If you want to support us, go to GamingUncensored.com and click that Become a Patron link there at the top of the page. We will have take your money and buy stuff, video games and stuff for the show with it. It is literally all we spend that money on. Like, that's it. So we appreciate it a ton. Just makes our lives a bit more manageable in doing this show.
And we have to say that, like, we would not be able to be as coherent as we are without you guys doing what you do. Like, there's no way that we could afford to keep up with all of the stuff that we do try to play to do this show correctly. I was watching a stream the other day and it said thanks to so and so for the copy of the game, whatever the company was, and I was like, why can't we be that cool? We're not. Like, you guys are the reason that allows us to do this, and I'm thankful for it. So, that's great.
For sure, 100%. So, before we get into all the Xbox stuff, we should talk briefly about Onimusha, because it's worth talking about just a little bit, because the demo is out there. And so I got to at least get a little bit hands-on with it, feel what it feels like. It's just a game we've talked about a ton, because as we've talked about it, well, we've talked about it a ton. It's a game that is dear to us in our younger days,
right.
Our late teens, early adult years. Is kind of when I think I was playing Onimusha.
Yes.
But just, you know, we enjoyed that, killing things, draining souls, that kind of stuff, before it was trendy, which I feel like is a lot more trendy now. It was like, this is very much an updated version of Onimusha, in that the, at least as far as I remember, realize it's been a long time since we played this game back in the day.
Just say we're old.
Super old. We are definitely old. But the way I remember it was more hack and slash back in the day. This is more tactical combat kind of thing, which, again, is kind of what combat games or games of this stripe, the combat looks like now. Which isn't a bad thing, and the combat actually plays really nice in this game. It is fun. I enjoyed it. I have seen people online complain it was too easy. I got wiped out by the boss in the demo a handful of times, and so I think it's probably pretty well balanced. But I'm not good at these kind of games, and so like that's the kind of like the timing, because it does have heavy parry mechanics and dodge mechanics and that kind of stuff, again, like we're used to seeing in these style games in modern gaming. And so it feels like it does more of that than the original did, again, with the caveat of we're old and it's been a long time since we played the original. And I'm just not as good at games as I used to be. Like, I got older. My reflexes aren't quite as quick, you know? Like, these games are just harder because we're old. And so, like, I felt that. And all that said, it was still quite fun. I'm looking forward to the game. I don't know if it's going to be a day one purchase with just everything else that's going to be out there. But it's a game that I sure intend to get to because it's going to be fun.
I can say this. I've seen literally about 3 minutes of the game. I saw you die twice playing that boss you're talking about. And then I saw you kill the boss. And in the 3 minutes that I saw him, like, oh, yeah, this is it. And you're right. I can tell you for a fact that it was more hack and slashy than this is. This is more... more technical, more Sekiro kind of a thing, which I would completely get destroyed at. So I'm glad you're playing it, because I have no shot. But I can tell by looking at it, it has whatever the thing is that made me love Onimusha. I can't tell you what that is, but I was like, oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it definitely has that. And again, what that is, I'm not sure. The portion before the boss fight, you play about 30 minutes of the demo before you get to the boss fight or so. And it is going through an area. It's very on rails, like the
originals were. Yeah.
So you get kind of a couple of kind of, in the demo again, one kind of bigger area that you have a little bit of exploration to, but there's like gates that are locked and you're like, oh, can't go that way. And then, you know, like 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, that gate now is unlocked because of something that happened. You know, like it forces you to go certain places and hit certain beats in the story. And it's, you know, it's a very limited map and all that kind of stuff. Again, that's the kind of game that it was before. It's not like big open world, like Elder Scrolls or something, Elder Scrolls as well. Elden Ring, it doesn't have like that big, like you just go anywhere and do what you want and they're kind of left to this world. It's going to guide you quite along the way. It's going to have all of these stops on the path. And that's fine. Like, again, that's what we grew up with. I don't really mind it. The gameplay is fun and that's all that matters. Like, story is whatever. Like, right. I'm not... The character, I can't remember what the main character's name is.
I don't know.
Because I'm terrible with non-English names because I'm a dumb American. So it just doesn't stick with me. But, like, the voice actor is very, like, action hero-y and, like, it's, you know, it's kind of over the top. It's kind of ridiculous at times. But the gameplay is really fun, and it's going to be, you know, probably a like 10-15 hour experience. That's probably going to be pretty solid. So, good. Yeah, that's what I want from Onimusha.
Like that, the thing about it is, I know for a fact this is one of those games that once you get your hands on it, and you start playing it, you will play it till it's done. It's not like one of those things that you play a few hours and you're like, okay, I'll come back to that. It will suck you in till it's over. And I'm based on what I've seen, I'm down with that. Like that's cool.
Yeah. For sure. So that's Onimusha. Really quickly, because I know you guys spend a little bit of time with it. I want to hear your thoughts on Bond.
So I have not purchased it yet. I have money in my pocket from the Patreon guys to purchase it. I got that last night, and I looked up the Steam return policy. I'll tell you why in a second, because before I purchased it, I watched you play a little bit of it, and the first part of it, I got really excited because I was like, oh yeah, I could do this, and then you get to the training segments with the timers, and I'm like, I think I'm not gonna be able to do this. And so I am going to purchase it and hope that those timers are forgiving or you don't have to hit a certain time thing or whatever, because the rest of the game I think I can do if it's not on a timer. So I'm going to purchase it, and if it doesn't work out, like... I'll reimburse the show account or something because I have to try this. It's really cool. I like what they did. I love the montage thing. I love the cuts. I like all of it because it's something that we have not seen as far as directing really in games. And the one that really stuck with me is when he walked out of MI6 and Monty Penny said, "Good luck, James." And as she's saying "Good luck, James," they are transitioning to the next section. I'm like, that's really cool. Yeah. That's the freaking direction right there. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And like, one thing, we've talked about it before, we're audio geeks. So instead, because you didn't start from the very, very beginning. You tried, and the PlayStation stream died.
Yes.
And so I had to go find a streamer that I know that does really well. 4K, 60 FPS, good sound, the whole thing. And I turned it on, and I sent you a text at like 11:45 last night. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a movie.
Yeah.
Because there's like music just jamming like all the way through it, and it's subtle, and it like, I'm like, I have to have this.
The music is so good. I'm glad you brought up the music, because it just is like playing with the Bond theme, and it just uses those Bond motifs kind of underneath, and so you get like, oh yeah, there it is, but it's not like like in your face kind of thing, you know, like it's really well done, and you just like, it makes you happy. It just, yeah, I really appreciate the music in it.
You get that.
Wait till you get to the club scene. Yeah. The club scene music gets a little overwhelming. I'll warn you ahead of time, it is very well done. It is, I mean, it is like playing a movie. We talk about games being cinematic, and there's lots of great examples of games that are super cinematic. This game is cinematic in a different way of using that term. I don't think cinematic's the right term for it. It really is movie-like in a way that's not just cinematic. The editing, the transitions, that kind of stuff feels like a movie.
Let's change our definition of that. Because usually when you and I say that, we have some idea of what that means, and that you don't really do a lot. Like a Kojima game, kind of like a movie, like you play a little bit and then you put the controller down for 45 minutes. That is not this.
Yeah.
That is not this. You're actually playing this thing that feels like a movie, and it's got the sound, and it's got the visuals, and it's got the, like, it's all there. And it's fabulous.
Yeah.
And Duff, God bless him, he's still playing Death Stranding too, and he's loving it, and he's trying to pull me into Death Stranding. And I told him last weekend after I saw the monitor review, I was like, you're going to have to put Death Stranding down because you got to see this. And I still believe that.
Yeah.
I'm so afraid of not being able to do what I want to do in this game, because this is one of those that I feel like I have to try. Like I have to see if I can pull it off, because if I can, it's going to be a great ride.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm excited to get back to it. I had to tear myself away from it to play the Onimusha demo and then the Star Fox demo, which we will talk about when we talk about Nintendo, which I'm glad I did, because both of those were enjoyable, and we'll get into the details of them. But I got back to Bond as soon as I could.
Because
it really is fabulous. And so we will talk about it more, as well as those other games more. But this episode is, as we mentioned, about Xbox. So we had the Xbox showcase about a week ago now. We are behind, as we told you we would be. But we are catching up. Before, though, we dive into the actual showcase, there is a little, I think, preface that we need to set here, because I think it frames the showcase a little bit better. Asha and Matt released this letter, and you can go find this lots of places online, the Xbox Reset. and the next 100 days of what kind of Xbox is doing. They released this after the showcase as kind of leaning in onto, did you see that awesome showcase? It was so awesome, wasn't it? Here's this letter about things we got to do that they are calling, like I said, the Xbox reset. And so we're going to kind of take it reverse and start with talking about the letter and then get into how that kind of frames the showcase. The letter is basically, hey, we had this great showcase. Things are, you know, got a positive trajectory for Xbox, but also there are things that are important, specifically here, quote, now we start the next 100 days. It's important to have both optimism and realism as we work to reset the business. And then they go into several bullet points that I'll, five bullet points, I think, so maybe not several, but I'll give you the gist of them super quickly. One is a lot of people play their games. They say over 1 billion people play Xbox, which, okay, across different platforms, whatever, but their competition is attention, which I think is the most important part of this whole thing. Saying there's more great games, TV series, franchises, creators, content formats, apps, etc., than ever before. And that is true for the whole gaming industry. That's not obviously...
and everywhere else.
For sure. That TV has that same problem. Movies have that same problem. Any kind of content is fighting for attention amongst tons and tons and tons of other content. There's just content everywhere in the world right now.
Can we talk about that for a second, because if there are younger people listening to this show, I don't think if you are under the age of 30 that you understand that the way that we grew up, we could watch and play everything that was out there,
yeah,
and not miss anything.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was, and we did.
Yeah.
We were. If we would have been able to do this show in the 90s, we would literally have talked about every game on the planet because we played it. And if we didn't play it, we had the opportunity to play it. It's not that way now. It's not that way with TV. It's not that way with movies. It's not that way with music. It's there's so much stuff that you can't even... you can't even try to get to it all. And if you're under the age of 30, I don't know how obvious that is.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. That just content-wise, we grew up in a different world. And I think a lot of times it's easy for us to fall back into the habits of what the world was as opposed to what it is currently. But for, like... we've talked about this a lot, and I'll speak for myself here, but I think this is relatively true for you, though we've both adapted on this. But neither one of us are people that just fire up YouTube and just, like, watch YouTube for hours on end as if it were TV. Right. We watch TV. Like, we still watch TV shows and that kind of stuff. But, like, we don't have the same, like, connection with, like, that world of online content like YouTube, but obviously there's lots of other stuff in there that a lot of the younger generation does. Like, just is it how we grew up and is it how we currently interact with that world? But like, you know, like, guy I work with, 5 years younger than me, like, YouTube is what he spends all of his entertainment time on. You know, like, that's, he doesn't watch TV. He does watch a lot of TV. I would take that back. He watches tons of content. He's just the, like, maybe one of the, he doesn't play a lot of video games, but he, like, takes every other kind of content and just consumes tons and tons of content. But a lot of that is YouTube or other online sources or, you know, stuff like that, that is vying for attention at this point. And if you are a video game company, you can't just look at, if you're Microsoft, that Sony and Nintendo are your competitors. In some ways, they're your least competitors at this point.
Yeah.
Like, it really is all these other avenues that we have of getting entertainment. And you have to be able to set yourself apart for those things too.
And I would go one step further than that. I've had to go back and forth to my parents a lot recently because I haven't been able to be here because I haven't had enough help. And when I go back and forth to my parents, I have a 13-year-old laptop and my cell phone. And so I use my cell phone a lot more for email and for that kind of stuff. And I thought that that was something that I would adapt to, but I got to tell you something. After 3 days of using my cell phone for doing 90% of what I do, I feel awful.
Yeah,
I don't know how people look at the thing all day, every day, because when I'm home, like, if you get a text from me, it's either from my watch or from this computer that I'm sitting on. I rarely send a text from my phone. I'm not looking at Instagram on my phone. I'm not looking at Facebook on my phone. And on top of that, I'm not looking at any of them on this desktop, really, unless I have to log in and do something for work or the show or whatever. My 66-year-old mother spends more time on Instagram than I do. And I look at it and go, like, she's on the couch, and I'm like, I don't understand how you do that. Like, it hurts my brain.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you feel that way, but it just doesn't feel good.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's different ways of interacting with the world that just didn't exist when we were younger and weird to adapt to. Point number two on this is essentially we're losing money, guys. It talks about how they've spent $20 billion over the last 5 years in ongoing investments. And, you know, different studios and that kind of stuff all makes sense. But their annual revenue has declined nearly $500 million during that same time. Obviously, that needs to change. And so that's hard point number one, maybe. Then number three is we're in a hardware component crisis and talks about the cost of memory and the processing and how that's affecting, you know, their ability to make consoles. It ends with this line that I think is really important. We are currently unable to make as many consoles as players want to buy, and we need a new business model and partnerships for hardware as we remain committed to Helix. That says to me, we're still going to make this hardware, knowing that hardware is not probably going to be the biggest thing, the biggest way that we are distributing these games. And I hear streaming in that. I hear streaming in a little bit more of what they're talking about going forward here. Point number four is we have to expand our studio system when we need a pipeline of content to meet multiple strategies across subscription, streaming, and devices, which again, subscription with Game Pass, streaming with Game Pass, but you know, same idea. And then obviously devices with Helix and current Xbox generation stuff. So how do we figure that out? How do we look at that? And then point number five is about their platform infrastructure, saying that their systems are way overly complex and that they have to streamline in order to make the business work, make sense going forward, that they have to evolve, rebuild their stack, look at capabilities across Xbox and potential other places to help with hardware, PC, mobile, and streaming. Again, those are kind of the different buckets there. That it's not just your Xbox. What isn't said in any of those points, which again is if you're going to have a hard conversation, one of the things that probably needs to come up in that hard conversation is streamlining also implies job losses. They're setting the stage for big layoffs coming, which again, where they are business-wise isn't a surprise, but just I think we all need to be anticipating the fact that we're probably going to see some studio closures and some layoffs and some, like, where they talk about systems being complex. Streamlining that is going to mean either outsourcing some of it or bringing some of that in-house, but either way is probably going to lead to job losses either directly or indirectly. And that's going to be a part of all of this. That's been a part of the gaming industry news for the past like 5 years pretty consistently. That's not going to change.
Well, and I posted a video on this Discord that made a point about another company in another sector outsourcing stuff to Egypt or something to that effect. It's happening everywhere, and it goes back to the discussion that we had 3 or 4 months ago where the capitalism discussion that we had, we're both in favor of everybody making as much money as they can, but how much money do you need to have before your desire for your bottom line begins to hurt people in that process? When I hear this and when I see that video like I posted, that's what this feels like. Like, okay, we said these are the numbers and we had to make these numbers. Something out of that video that stuck with me is that Microsoft or Xbox specifically is apparently at 3% profit, right?
Uh-huh.
And the guy that made the video was like, you could put your money in a bank right at this point and make more than 3%. Like, that's why Microsoft is so frustrated, because 3% is nothing.
Yeah. Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And so, like, his point was Microsoft's in deep, or Xbox is in deep, deep, deep trouble, whether they want to admit it or not. And there's a whole bunch of people about to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
Because of that number.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And again, it's kind of inevitable, and it's better. I hate to use the term better, but it's likely preferable that some people lose their jobs as opposed to everybody loses their jobs, right? Like when you're talking about a business that's going in the wrong direction, is there a way that you can turn that around and keep it, you know, viable, and where 80% of the people working there keep their jobs and you have 20% staff reduction, which is massive. And we're talking about huge people. I'm throwing out numbers here. So, you know, whatever, take it all with massive grain of salt, but like, or do you try to keep going with what you're doing and then, you know, have 3 or 4 years down the road, say this is all for naught and we can't make this work and everybody go home. Like, I get the argument there. I also very much understand the, like, how much of this is like just trying to make sure that our shareholders get as much return on investment as possible at the cost of people who are working night and day, making, you know, a middle class living, making games, and are not looking for, you know, big capital gain increases or whatever it is. You know, like, those are two different worlds, and the priorities always feel like that it's, let's make sure the shareholders are getting their return as they need to, so they will keep supporting us, even if that means cutting a whole bunch of jobs over here. And it's the ugly side of everything we talk about and what we do, but it is where we are.
Well, the corporate part, you said it, you nailed it on the head. The way that they're thinking is, we have to have these corporate people to stay alive because they're providing the money, whether we're talking about the board or partnerships or whatever. Like, we have to have these people to continue on, and so we have to keep them happy. And look, here's the thing, and I didn't want to bring this up right before we talk about the showcase, but Microsoft, and I'm going to say Xbox as a piece of that, Xbox has not been good at this since the 360, right?
Yeah.
Like, they haven't, whatever the it factor is, they don't have it.
Yeah.
Right? And so when we're talking about making changes in streaming and all of that, I don't think any of it matters, because you have to have the it thing. And the thing about the it thing is that it varies from project to project. Like Blizzard made $1 billion on World of Warcraft. They're still making $1 billion on World of Warcraft. They're making some money on Diablo, but they're not making that kind of money. And they're not making that kind of money on anything else, right? So Baldur's Gate 3, for example, Larian made $1 billion on Baldur's Gate 3. They may not make anything money-wise for 10 years because they may not have another hit, right?
Yeah.
So my Xbox, I keep saying Microsoft. Microsoft's a really big company. Got to stop saying that.
Yeah.
Xbox is not good at this. And I almost wish they would be like, yo, we understand we're not good at this. We're going to sit back and just let Microsoft be Microsoft. Because, I mean, the things that they're going to do, I don't think is going to improve their content.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good transition into the showcase, because that's kind of what they're trying to sell us on, right? They're trying to sell us on they have the it stuff, and we should see that and appreciate it. And so it gets into a little bit of their strategy. And so, but again, we'll get into the games here in just a second. I feel like the games were fine. We'll get into that. Maybe that's their problem. Let's say
that's
we're fine.
That's it. Right like, there.
But they're trying to convince us that they do have stuff that's really valuable and we should care about. And one of the ways they're doing that, and Asha came out, was part of the showcase on video, which was nice to see her as a face and a voice. Obviously not Phil, but she is filling that Phil's face. And so she was the first voice face. You kind of heard a part of that. And what she talked about was bringing back exclusives. And the very first game they showed was Gears of War E-Day. And she announced it's officially exclusive because there's a lot of expectation that it would be coming to PlayStation under kind of what the previous look of Xbox was. And so now we know it is exclusive. Like, this is going to be an exclusive title on Xbox, as is one other big title at the end of the show, Clockwork Revolution. We'll talk about more as well. But those are kind of two big games that they're kind of holding up as like, these are so important to the Xbox brand that we're going to keep them on Xbox proprietary hardware, streaming, whatever. Like, this isn't something you're going to get on the PlayStation. You can get it on Game Pass on your PC, whatever, you know. But, like, that this is Xbox ecosystem stuff. Everything else, I think, in the showcase was multi-platform, including Halo. But Gears of War and Clockwork Revolution are their exclusives. And to those two games, they both look really fun.
Well, I mean, it pours us out, but...
Right, yeah. But those two games that we saw in the showcase, like... They both look really good. Gears of War is fun. Gears of War is not a system seller for me personally.
No, no.
Clockwork Revolution could be. That's by far the game in this.
Clockwork either has the ability to be the next BioShock or another dud.
Or a lesser derivative of BioShock, right? Like, it does have a very like heavy BioShock feel. But I don't. It's a totally different kind of game, but it makes me think of and I'm blanking on the name, it was right there, Obsidian and
Outer Worlds.
Yeah. I want to say Outer Wilds, which is a different game that's very, very cool. Outer Worlds, that are like good games, not great games, right? Like solidly good games.
Can I say this? I played all the way through the original Outer Worlds. I thought it was great. And the I think that's the problem, is the Outer Worlds 1 was great. And the Outer Worlds 2 is more of that with not a lot of really serious adjustments. I mean, you have the faults and that's kind of
creaky knees.
But essentially it's kind of the same thing, and you're kind of doing the same thing you were doing in the real, like, I mean, I'll get back to it. I'll probably play all the way through it, but like,
yeah,
it's all right.
And that's what I hope. Clockwork Revolution is great because it looks so cool, but it could just be all right. And again, if those are the exclusives at this point that Microsoft is kind of betting the farm on, so to speak, like, it feels kind of whatever. That said, let's talk about the games a little bit. Gears of War looks great, fun.
It does,
we get to see Marcus Fenix. We get to see it. Like, it feels like Gears of War. It has some backstory to what's happened in this world. Like, there's a lot of cool, interesting things to it. And because it'll be on Game Pass, we can play it. I'm perfectly fine as an Xbox exclusive. But if I did it, have a way to access Xbox platform stuff, it's not one that would get me to come over.
Well, that's the thing. If I didn't have an Xbox, this is not going to make me buy an Xbox.
Yeah.
This is not a Baldur's Gate 3. It's not a Half-Life 3. It's not a Portal. It's not on that level, and probably neither is Clockwork. I think that's the entire problem with Microsoft since the 360. And let's be honest, 90% of the 360 what made the 360 the 360 was Halo.
Yeah.
I mean, that Halo.
Yeah.
That's everybody played Halo. Everybody.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll get to Halo in a little bit because there was Halo in here and it showed up. But it's not exclusive. And that's the thing here. Neither was the next game, which I am, the more I see it, the more excited I get about this. And I'm just setting myself up to be disappointed. And I realize that, but I'm still getting more and more into it. That's Fable.
Yeah.
The more I see a Fable, the more I like it. And that, you know, has been the thing about Fable forever. And so intellectually, I know that. But my heart wants Fable to be good and fun. And so I'm really getting optimistic about it.
We don't have time to do this, but I'm going to ask, what is it that you're seeing that makes, is it the thing that we saw with Fable 1 when Mona was like, it's this living, breathing world, and you can have kids, and you can have a house, and you can own the town, and you can, is it that? Is that the thing?
That's definitely a component of it, because that is, you know, the kind of gimmick behind what Fable is, but it, you know, like, it looks interesting, the story, like, I want to see where it goes. I think the world is fascinating. I, you know, like, there's just a lot about it that I'm like, this feels like a game I should like, even without the, like, you can, like, buy property and be a landlord and just spend your days doing that or whatever, you know, like the like slice of life element of Fable that may or may not, like, be executed well. And we'll see how well it gets done with this game. We're in an era where it's a lot more possible than it was when the first Fable came out. But like, if the gameplay is decent and the story is good, it should be a good game. Like, it just has the resources behind it. It has the talent behind it to be a good game, even if that, like, living world thing is still not executed in the same way. And I think maybe one of the reasons I'm optimistic is because I've kind of gotten over that thing, right? Like, I've been disappointed by that aspect of Fable so many times. I don't really expect that to be the thing that sells me on this Fable.
Okay, so in your mind, what makes it that? Let's say, what makes it what makes it a 90? Because across the board, let's take an example that we've been playing the last couple of days. Bond is a 90. It's close to a 10. It's debatable whether it's a 10. People love it. Okay, it's universally appraised across the internet. And granted, Cabbage brought this up, and no, I'm not putting words in your mouth because you said this. The bar for Bond has been so low since, like, GoldenEye that it doesn't take much for people to go, this, right? Like,
yeah.
And so, but like, so let's take that example. I think we all agree that it's an A game, maybe not A plus, but it's an A game, and we're going to play it to the end. What do you have to see from Fable to feel that?
I mean, it's a completely different thing.
Well,
makes Fable good is very different than what makes Bond good. And in a lot of ways, it's easier to make Bond good, I think, because, like, it's very, very formulaic. It's very much system dependent. Like, it's fun gameplay. It's very well acted and performed. But, like, it's a closed environment.
Right.
What makes Fable good, if Fable is good, is that the open environment, the free environment, is engaging, the world is interesting, the characters are interesting.
So the Skyrim thing.
That's much better as a comparison.
You want the Skyrim thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if they can execute a game that's like Skyrim, which has some of that, like, living world, slice of life kind of stuff to it, but, like, is it built upon that the same way Fable is? But if they could just execute a game that's, like, narrative-wise, character-wise, world-wise, in that realm, which I think they can, again, because they have that talent, then I think that's a solid. Is it a 90 game? I don't know. Is it 85? Probably. You know, like, it just is going to be in that kind of realm. Or maybe it blows our socks off and it's like a 97. You know, like, that I'm very skeptical about. But it has that high of a ceiling. Like, it could be that good it could also be a 60, you know, like it's got a very wide range of possibilities. But the more I see it, the more I'm like, okay, we're maybe in that kind of upper range as opposed to that lower range. And maybe this floor is getting higher on it. So, but important in the conversation, it's not exclusive. You can go play it on PlayStation when it comes out. And so that's a caveat here with Fable on the Microsoft Showcase. They're going to make money off of it, obviously, but it's not something that necessarily gets people to come to the Microsoft ecosystem, even though it is an Xbox title. Same thing for Halo, which is crazy to say, but Halo Campaign Evolved, we saw more of that, has some kind of prequel missions that take place before the original Halo Combat Evolved. Looks great. Comes out next month. It's Halo. I'm interested in replaying that content. It's also not exclusive. It's also going to be on PlayStation, which is very bizarre.
This one interests me because this one in particular looks like the Halo that everybody loved in the day that I was talking about. This looks like what we loved. And so when I saw that trailer, I was like, yep, that's it.
Yeah, for sure. And
again,
I mean,
I don't know what that is, but that's it.
Well, with this, it's literally like the bulk of the game is it's the game that we loved. Like it is pure nostalgia because it is this remake. But now it has that new content as well that they announced. I think like 3 new missions or something like that. That'll be, you know, different than the original title. But yeah, it's Halo and I'm so pumped about it. It's going to be fun. And I will likely play it on Xbox ecosystem because I pay for Game Pass, you know, and so I'm more likely to play it there than I am on the PlayStation because I am in the Xbox ecosystem. But if you're not in the Xbox ecosystem, like if you have a PlayStation, go play Halo on the PlayStation. Like even if you had an Xbox 360 or an original Xbox and loved Halo back in the day, you can play it on your PlayStation now if you have a PlayStation. A couple we'll go through quickly here. A new Plague Tale game, which is one of those franchises
we gotta get to.
Love, yeah. We haven't played any of it. They look really good, and this one looks really good. So there you go. A couple of Persona things to jump around a little bit. The Persona 4 remake, whatever, is they had a trailer for that, and then they also had a very, very cryptic teaser. They didn't show anything, but about Persona 6, and that Persona 6 is coming. That, again, one of those franchises. I have played a little bit of Persona. I played a chunk of Persona 5 and really, really enjoyed it. But it's just those games are so ridiculously long. It's just hard to commit to. I want to play more of those as well. But they're a big deal for a reason. They're very cool, even with the anime style, which isn't my style necessarily, but we've talked about that in the past. And then a whole bunch of kind of like what we kind of expect from Xbox games. State of Decay 3.
Yeah.
Looks fine. Sea of Thieves has new content. Okay. Metro 2039.
Can I say this? There are certain games, and I'm just going to use Metro as an example. Before it even said that it's Metro, it started and I'm watching, I'm like, this is Metro.
Yeah.
And that's and you and I really haven't put any serious time in Metro.
Yeah.
But my Another point one. Is, it's those titles where you see 30 seconds of it, there's no title, there's no nothing, and you, that's Metro. That's cool. Yeah. I feel like they don't give Metro enough play as they should, because I think it's one of those titles that, like, I watched 2 minutes before I was like, before there was a title and I was like, yep, that's Metro. Like, I think that's part of the problem with Xbox is the strategy.
Yeah. For sure.
Because they do have some of those that it's obvious that, hey, that's that game. So,
yeah, for sure. Bad Magpie, which is one I think actually looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting, that one.
It's very kind of like more cartoony graphics. It is, you're playing as a mischievous bird, which has become its own kind of genre, like the Angry Goose Game, whatever it was. I don't remember what it's called now. But in that kind of vein, that you're a magpie going around the world causing chaos, solving puzzles, looks pretty cool. dig that kind of thing. I'm going to skip through Cult Game. I Wanna Join Us is the name of it. I can't.
Yeah. That's been around for a couple of years. It was in the PC showcase.
Yeah.
Last year, I think.
I think so.
I don't want to run a cult.
That's kind of what I'm like.
I've got more power to those of you that are interested in that, but I'm like, no.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way.
Yeah.
There's a new Hellblade game coming. This one is just called Senua. And so we get whatever. Again, a franchise I think we'd probably dig, but haven't played a whole lot of. Have played a little bit.
Yeah, played a little bit.
But Fallout 76 has new content coming. Still a thing.
Okay.
Doom. Oh, go ahead.
Can we talk about Bethesda for a second? Because the Bethesda and Elder Scrolls have the same problem. They have been milking 76 for all it's worth because they don't have Fallout 5. Fallout 4 is one of those titles, like, I want to reload it so bad, but it's one of those titles that I know is not going to hold up, right? Yeah. You finished it. I did not finish it, and I know it's not going to hold up. And we made a big deal on the show about how it took me like 26 mods to get it to where I could play it. I don't want to go through that. And so every time I see them milking 76, I'm like, yeah, that's great. Where's Fallout 5?
Yeah,
for
sure.
And I think we're kind of in the same vein with The Elder Scrolls. Like, I'm more likely to reload Skyrim and go through all that crap because it's Skyrim and it's worth it than I am Fallout 4. That's how I feel about 76. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We have it. We're like, we have access to it. We can play it anytime we want. And just, yeah. Give me Fallout 5 and we're talking about something different, but yeah, I'm with you. Doom the Dark Ages is getting DLC, and so more Bethesda, which again looks ridiculous and over the top and kind of fun, and we should probably at least try it out sometime. And this one I'm interested to get your thoughts on because it is kind of a throwback again. Crazy Taxi is back.
Okay.
World Tour.
Okay. So you know, the thing that I was just talking about, something that you know it when you see it.
Uh-huh.
You know Crazy Taxi when you hear it.
Yes.
Because it always opens with Blink 182, and I'm like, what? Crazy Taxi, here it comes. And I'm totally with it because it was good. It was good back in the day. And I think it'd be good to play. But then again, if there was ever a Game Pass game, Crazy Taxi is a Game Pass game.
Yes. Yeah.
You play it, you have a few hours of fun, you put it down. And like, when I saw Crazy Taxi, you want to know what my first thought was? My first thought was, please tell me you're going to put out Jet Set Radio.
Right.
Please tell me Jet Set Radio is coming, because that's what I want.
Yeah, Crazy Taxi is not the thing that, like, Dreamcast Crazy Taxi was fun because it was kind of gimmicky and novel at the time.
And it was new, like, yeah, it was new. Nobody done that.
Yeah, but in 2026, I don't know that I need it. It comes next year, so technically in 2027. Like, the way that I felt, like, excited about Stuntman coming back, Crazy Taxi, I didn't feel that. But you're absolutely right. If you put it up on Game Pass, it's, like, stupid fun. You get a couple hours of good time out of it and not paying anything extra for it. I can get behind that. So, they announced a 25th anniversary Xbox Series X that's translucent green. It's kind of cool. You can see inside the thing. It's green in there, you know, kind of trying to reset Xbox and really getting back to the roots, like they're leaning in heavily to a lot of the kind of previous aesthetics as well. Age of Empires getting content. Minecraft Dungeons 2. Okay, I don't know.
Okay, so we have to talk about this because we're going to talk about it over multiple shows. The Minecraft look is becoming a thing.
Yeah.
For multiple games, for multiple studios.
Uh-huh.
I have a kid that works in my house that loves Minecraft, that plays Minecraft with his girlfriend on his phone. Like, I understand it's a big deal. I get it. I get that apparently it's cool, but for the life of me, I can't understand why that aesthetic is cool and games are going to that. In the PC gaming show, there are several, I saw at least two shooter games
that were
built around the Minecraft aesthetic, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's not my thing either. I don't love the look of it.
Because I'll tell you why it's not our thing. Because that's what we had to live through.
Right.
Like that's what video games were.
And yeah. But also, we never played Minecraft as serious players of Minecraft. I've fired it up a couple of times. But it wasn't our thing. It was a little bit past our time, or we were past its time, I guess, technically, because we're old. If you grew up playing Minecraft, like so many people did, I'm sure there is a nostalgia for that style. But surely not for us. I don't like it at all. Mm-hmm. There was this game called Magicians, The Devil's Deal. This looks cool.
That looks really cool. I seen you a text on that one. I'm like, that's a winner right there.
Yeah,
that's...
it's like, it has some like Dishonored kind of feel to it, but you're like running around the world with a magic wand, which is bizarre. And so I don't know if it's actually going to be good, but it has potential. It kind of has an interesting premise of like making a deal with Satan. You get to like interact with the devil all through this thing. And I don't know. It could be good. It could be terrible, but I was interested in it at least.
It was one of those games, and you guys don't understand what Tommy has to put up with from me this time of year. If I start watching something and see interesting things, he just gets a block of text that runs for like 2 hours long. Check this out. Check that out. And I do that when I see something that is interesting or new, because like 80% of the time, like I'm watching these showcases going, it's not, they did that 10 years ago. No. And so Tommy has a whole list of stuff on his phone that I'm like, ooh, check this out, check that out. And Magicians was one of them. It just really looks interesting.
It does look interesting. I want to see what they do with it. Similarly, Valor Mortis looks interesting.
Yes. Okay. So I thought the concept was interesting 2 years ago, but something about this, they built it out in a way.
Yeah.
That, again, it has that sort of Bioshocky feel to it.
Yes, very much so.
And I'm like, yeah, I can get with that. Plus, you're a history guy, and it's Napoleon, and yeah.
It was like Napoleon with like fire shooting out of his hands, and like it's just like the crazy, like steampunkish kind of enemies, and like, I don't know. It's super bizarre, but kind of fascinating. Like I want to see it. They're calling it a Souls-like. Didn't feel
no.
But maybe like everything is called a Souls-like these days, and so maybe it is. So I don't know. Elder Scrolls Online got content. Microsoft Flight Simulator, again, this is made probably only for me, but it's getting a national park update. Flight through the national parks. I'm like, you got me. I will be there for hours on end. So. I'm trying to just get through what's left here. A new Castlevania, Belmont's Curse looks cool.
That one I like because it's, I couldn't tell if it was a straight 2D or if it was like 2.5D.
Yeah.
We both played a little bit of Replaced. And I'm going to tell you, Replaced is awesome.
Yeah, Replace is very cool.
Replace is like, again, I've gotten to a point with it where I'm at a point that I need some Tommy assistance. And if I had it, I would continue to play. Like, but that 2.5D thing is really interesting. And the first thing that I thought when I saw this Castlevania was like, I wonder if it's going to have that.
Yeah.
Because if it has that, because this reminded me of Castlevania 2. What's the name of that? Simon's... Simon's Quest.
Simon's Quest.
Yeah. Simon's Quest. That was the first Castlevania I really played. And this kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I do
plus,
too.
Plus, I love that the main character is a woman.
Yes. Like, that is awesome. The thing that probably stands out the most and is, again, very, very cool. The art style looks good. It looks like it's going to play well. It's that Metroidvania thing, the Vania side now of the Metroidvania, but very much looks like it plays, you know, like a hardcore Metroidvania game. And I'm watching the trailer again going, oh, man, that looks so good.
Yeah.
That looks very good. So Spyro the Dragon is back.
Cool.
Spyro, right? And then we got Clockwork Revolution. And so we already talked about it a little bit, but just again, it has the potential to be very, very cool. The style is so cool. The setting, the very like steampunk nature of it, the very Bioshocky nature, like all these things. It looks so over the top and ridiculous. Like, there is a chance that it's just going to be too ridiculous, like too over the top, but I want them to get right up to that line without crossing it, because like the little doll is so entertaining. I hope this game is good. It looks like it could be really, really fun.
I want to tell you, I want a new shock game so bad that after I saw Clockwork, I was like, I need to go get the System Shock remake, because I just want to play System Shock. Because I saw in an interview the other day, somebody said nobody realizes System Shock started all of this. And they're right. It did. If there was nothing like System Shock when it came out. Yeah. Nothing. And after seeing that, I was like, I want to go buy the remake and play System Shock.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know if there's anything else we need to talk about it at this point. It's coming out next year sometime.
We'll see. That's the thing. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
A lot of these dates that I like,
Yeah, a lot of what we've talked about is like Fables 2027, Persona 6 doesn't even like have any like anything. It's 2020, well, 2029, I would imagine.
And going back to what we talked about at the beginning, hardware ain't getting any cheaper.
Nope.
Right? Like, they are going to, I think this is my opinion, depending on what the install base is for the next hardware, some of this is going to get pushed, because I don't care how good Magnus is. I'm not paying $1,500 for it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
We both have killer PCs, and our PCs are good enough that we can upgrade parts for the next 10 years and have rocking PCs for the next 10 years. And I'm so grateful for that. Thank you, Duff, for taking care of both of us. I have no desire to pick up Magnus at $1,500. And I got to think that I'm not the only one, right? So if they build this thing and the install base is what the install base has been for the Series S and X,
yeah,
some of this stuff gets pushed.
Yeah, for sure. Helix, by the way. Helix.
Right.
Helix.
Sorry.
At this point. But yes, your point, totally valid. We don't even know when that thing's coming. And with the hardware thing being the thing that it is right now, I don't think they're going to be in any hurry, but I don't know what they're doing in the meantime. You know, like, I think they want to be able to keep talking about it, that we have hardware coming, but they can't commit to anything yet because they don't know how to make it viable because everything's so stinking expensive right now. And so their hope is just things bottom out somehow or level out or whatever it is to make it more feasible. But it certainly isn't right now. But that's kind of where we are. But wait, there's one more thing. There was one last thing.
Right.
It was Call of Duty.
Yeah.
We don't care. But they did do like an extended Call of Duty thing at the end. So if you Call of Duty, there was some Modern Warfare 4 stuff.
Again, that's some of that Xbox stuff that it's like, really? Like really?
Yeah, but like, I mean,
I know a ton of people play Call of Duty.
I was about to say, one of these other games we just talked about is going to sell more than Call of Duty.
I get it, but okay. All right, so
I mean, I'm with you. I don't care in the slightest.
What they did at the end of this with the extended Gears of War, you know,
yes.
thing, I appreciate. I understand what they were trying to do, but and I know the reason they didn't do what I'm about to suggest is because they didn't have enough. Gears of War is not that game that you do a Gears Direct for. Clockwork is. Like, and they didn't do it because they it's not there. They don't have
Gears
it.
Gears comes out this year.
Right.
That's a thing.
But like, I'm watching this Direct thing, and they made a big deal out of it at the end of the press conference because they want you to stay for 30 minutes longer, which, by the way, the PC gaming show does the same thing, and I hate the live and the last 30. Like, I hate it. Why are you guys doing that? It's awful. I don't need to see Jules in the sun getting a sunburn. Like, that's the sun. I don't need that. Just cut it off in an hour and a half and be done. But my point is, it's all the developer stuff, and they're talking about how cool it is to work on Gears of War, and they're all Gears of War fans, and we're going back to Gears of War, and you know, and it's just, okay, I get it, okay, but this is not that game.
Yeah, 100%. So it was, you know, an Xbox showcase, and it felt like an Xbox showcase. And we'll play a couple of the games because we have Game Pass, and they have not convinced us to buy hardware, nor are they likely to anytime soon. We'll see what the future holds, but they got a long ways to go before we get there.
Real quick before we wrap this, how many months do you think do we have before Game Pass goes back up?
I think we have a little while. Because of the backlash and then the like goodwill it showed to bring the price down. It's not going to be forever, obviously, but I think we got a year.
Reason I bring that up is because the video that I posted on Discord, the guy was like, it's that guy that always posts the bell yellow guy, the guy that's he's like English or something. And I love to listen to his videos because he's really smart and he has the accent and he does really good stuff. But the point that he made is that she banked all of this goodwill so that she could send out this letter.
Yeah.
And all these people are fixing to get fired. And like, I guess my point is, his first video in that series was called The Charm Offensive, and it was talking about how charming Asha is and was, and like, she's a hardcore gamer and she believes in Xbox and all of that. And the point with this video was that she did all of that and to bank all this goodwill so that she could do this thing that she's doing now. So my question is, how long is it before we see Evil Sharma that's like, I'm the AI queen and we're going all AI because AI is where the money's at? Because that's the point that he made, was like, Elon's making $1 billion a year off of Colossus selling compute to Anthropic and everybody else because nobody has it except him. And Microsoft wants in that. They want in that AI money. And sure. So when do we get evil Asha, I guess is what I'm...
It's a good question. I have no clue. And I don't know how it manifests. Like, the letter of, like, hard truths that doesn't get to some of the hard truths that are going to be a part of that. It still beats around the bush. But does, like, set up some of that, like, there's another side to this that we're going to see pretty soon. I think it's going to hit more on the internal side than the consumer side to at least start with. I think they've already done, feel like they've done enough on the like consumer harm side that they've got to rebuild a little bit of trust there. But again, like prices go up. Like Game Pass is going to be more expensive in the future. Like the fact that it came down is a massive anomaly. That doesn't happen. The subscription price is going to go up. Everything goes up. We'll be paying more for Game Pass in 2 years than we are right now. Will we be paying more in 1 year? I don't know. What other ways does that manifest? I don't know. What I was kind of surprised by, and I thought this wouldn't be the case at first, but like Gears of War and Clockwork Revolution, which both are the exclusives that they're touting, still say they're day one on Game Pass. And I thought there would be a really good chance that that wouldn't be the case, that they would take their exclusives off of Game Pass and make those say that we believe so strongly in this product, in this IP, whatever, that we aren't going to devalue it. If I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but putting it on Game Pass and saying it's part of your subscription fee as opposed to a standalone purchase can be devaluing. And they didn't do that. And so I'm curious if that's something that's still in the works.
They didn't do that because they screwed up so bad raising the price.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I'm...
Yeah, that's what I really want to do. Yeah, that's what needs to happen business-wise, but we can't because we screwed up so bad, and if we do it again, we will lose everybody.
And part of that may be that those games were already said to be coming to Game Pass, whereas they had not been confirmed of being multi-platformed yet, like Halo is. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the next kind of consumer side pain point. Again, I don't know exactly how to say this because I don't know that it's bad business or bad for consumers.
It's not. It's the way that it was when we were kids.
It was the way it was until like 3 years ago. Yeah, until Game Pass started putting like, all these.
I mean, if you want, okay. So, we don't have time for this.
We do not.
If you want us to go buy a console, you have to put a game on a console that we don't own.
Right.
Right? Like, it's just logic.
Yes.
Right?
And so I could see that as being a thing that happens, but they didn't do it yet. And so I think this is going to be incremental. We'll see what kind of things. Again, what's the next shoe to drop here? What do we see after this 100 days reset? Because that's where they are right now. They are doing this reset thing. And so we will be getting news from Microsoft. Again, this has been the least consequential of the major three game companies, but the most newsy for like the past 2 years. So it just continues at this point. At least people are talking about them. We're talking about Xbox all the time, even though we don't own Xbox hardware. We still talk about them all the time. We don't play a lot of their exclusive games. We still talk about them all the time. And so for what it's worth, they're still getting talked about and there's value to that. So but anyway, we do need a wrap for this show, and we will have plenty more thoughts as we
will. There's a lot. I got thoughts on Nintendo. There's a lot of stuff going there. So
that's where we will go next. So on the next show, whenever that is, we will be talking Nintendo.
And of course, if you want to hang out with us, the best place to do that is on the Discord. And if you're still listening and you think the Gaming Uncensored group on Facebook is dead, it mostly is. But I posted the last episode there. So if you're over there, please come join us on the Discord. There's a lot more of you over there, apparently, than are on the Discord. So please come join us on the Discord. It's a great community. We're having a lot of fun. You can interact with us in lots of different ways. You can send us an email, gaminguncensored@gmail.com, or the voicemail line at
509 game 210.
Which I have to call because I'm not really sure that it's still working, but I'm gonna do that.
They haven't bugged us in a little bit, which is kind of worrisome.
I'm a little worried about that. But definitely call the voicemail line and make sure that's still working. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We are the Idiots Explaining Entertainment. It's extravaganza, and it's all in gaming. This is the Dungeon, and we are out. Is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.